Welcome to GhostBiz here on the Business Report. I'm Gary Strubel, and let's find out what's going on in the markets with the Finance Ghost. Before we get started, though, just remember you can get this podcast and all of our previous episodes and segments wherever you pick up your podcasts. You can go to socials as well, and you can go to nova.com.na. Thank you for making us Namibia's number one business podcast. Right, Ghost, let's get into it. Pick and Pay, some news out of Pick and Pay. Now, here in Namibia, Pick and Pay have withdrawn for now, certainly in the grocery space, and that chain has rebranded. But Pick and Pay in South Africa has a whole turnaround strategy. What do we learn from the numbers that are out?
Hello, Gary. Hello, listeners in Namibia and elsewhere. Yeah, what can we learn from Pick and Pay? I think we can learn that turnarounds are difficult, and grocery turnarounds are even more difficult because it really is not easy to do what they are trying to do. I mean, that's actually a very interesting insight you've given me there into Namibia. And it essentially reflects what's happening in the broader Pick and Pay group. In the latest period, they closed 65 loss-making stores. Now, obviously, that helps to stem the losses, clearly, but it has an ugly knock-on effect because when a grocery chain shrinks, then the volumes going through the chain as a whole obviously go down. And that means that volume rebates are much harder to negotiate with suppliers. What does that mean? Well, it means that gross margin then comes under pressure because they don't get the best prices from suppliers anymore. And so you end up, it's almost like being in the grips of a python. You know, it just keeps squeezing you and you try so hard to break out, but you just can't. All you have to do is contrast it to how ShopRite is doing, because of course, every time Pick and Pay closes a store, maybe in some cases they haven't been replaced by a competitor, but 99% of the time a competitor will swoop in there. It will pretty often be ShopRite. And so their volumes are just going up and up and up all the time, which then makes their gross margins better. And if ShopRite can buy more competitively, then they can give better prices, which encourages more volumes. Anyway, you see the problem here. Pick and Pay is the Impala and ShopRite is the Python. And unfortunately, this is coming through in the numbers because yes, Pick and Pay might be in the turnaround, but they're not actually making nearly as much progress as the market would like them to. And I've been pretty skeptical of this turnaround throughout. It's all good and well to see an uptick in like-for-like sales and Pick and Pay no longer losing ground versus competitors in terms of like-for-like sales. But the thing is still loss-making. Pick and Pay itself, the Pick and Pay supermarkets chain, is heavily loss-making. And unfortunately, they've guided that those losses are going to continue at the current level for a while still. There isn't an immediate improvement expected. So for me, this is still a really tough story. Pick and Pay as a group is reliant very much on Boxer. It's a stake in Boxer to keep things ticking over. And if Pick and Pay eventually runs out of money again, and guess what? They'll have to sell down more of their stake in Boxer. I would not be surprised to see that happen in the next couple of years because this turnaround is taking a long time. So I remain bearish on the story. And that's the main learning, really, is grocery turnarounds are super difficult.
Now, we often mention in the show your excellent newsletter that people can subscribe to. If you go to ghostmail.co.za, there's a number of different newsletters. The one I enjoy most is Ghost Bites. Astoria adds its name to a list of companies that want to leave the market. We had a story last week about new listings, but the constant spate of delistings occur. Astoria, however, wants to get off the market for a very specific reason. Tell us a little bit about what the problem is with investment holding companies on the JSE.
Yeah, investment holding companies do all suffer from basically the same problems. So Astoria is but one example of many. And the issue is that the market values them at a deep discount to their intrinsic net asset value. So in simple terms, what that means is the directors say, you know, hi, everyone, we own all these assets. And if you add them all together and then you subtract all the debts we have, this is what the value should be. And let's say that value is $100. Now, the market looks at it and says, OK, cool, that's fine. But we're actually going to value you at $60 or a 40% discount to that net asset value. And that is very much the typical discount that you see in the market. They kind of all sit in that range. Like a really good one might get down to like 30%. You'll rarely see it close more than that. Is it too high? Look, a discount to NAV is warranted because the NAV won't take into account things like the cost of being listed, for example, the marketability discount of trying to sell all of those assets in one shot versus selling them off piecemeal. So some discount is warranted, but it should probably be more like 20% rather than 40%. And this ties up with some of the delistings that we're seeing happening and where the independent experts are giving their opinion that the deal pricing is fair. So Astoria is just one example. It's a perfect example, actually, because if you look at the way they've worked out their offer to shareholders, they've essentially split the difference in terms of the discount to NAV. They've basically met shareholders halfway on that one. And there's an interesting additional nuance to that deal, which is an unbundling of Goldrush shares before the delisting. So the offer is actually a bit better for shareholders than it would appear if you just give it a cursory read. But it is a bigger problem, unfortunately, when an investment holding company is trading at a big discount to NAV. Their hands are tied. They can't really issue new shares because then they're diluting everyone. So it's very hard to then go and do deals. It's a problem. So they end up selling off assets, they do share buybacks, or they just shut the thing down, or they delist. These structures are slowly disappearing from our market because of the structural issue, unfortunately.
Just an update then on that listing from last week. Optasia coming to the market. They seem to be an Africa-focused fintech group, and FNB's taken a big punt at 20%. Tell us more.
Yeah, how interesting is that, right? I love the first round investment in Optasia. And you couldn't ask for a better underpin for an IPO. So when you're coming to IPO in the market and you're trying to convince people that you are worth investing in and that people should invest in you at the price that you've put out there, and then you have one of South Africa's best financial services groups quite happily taking a 20.1% stake at the price that is at the top end of the IPO range, that is pretty much dream IPO stuff. So that IPO closes basically this week, and I suspect that it will be successful. Optasia is a really interesting business. There's nothing else we have on the JSE quite like it. It's a fintech platform, not just in Africa, but very focused in Africa at the moment. And basically it connects financial institutions and customers looking for microfinance and airtime credit solutions. Optasia does take on the credit risk. So I think that's a very, very important point. They're not just a platform where they take some kind of commission and then the bank wears the credit risk. The way they structure the economics is that Optasia is actually taking the credit risk, but the way that they manage it is they've built the proprietary algorithm that they believe gives them deep insights into the borrowers and allows them to actually do this. Specifically in frontier markets where traditional lending doesn't really work, you can't actually ask someone for a payslip or their salary, et cetera, if that's not how they survive. If they survive on informal trading, for example, you know, things get a lot more complex. So cool business, big help for them that First Rand has jumped in there. And yeah, I'm just excited to get something new on the JSE, to be honest.
And let's just close with an update on a story we've been following for a while now in the media sector, and that is Canal Plus, the French giant, who've effectively taken control of MultiChoice and are now busy with a process called squeeze out. It seems that there is some progress being made there. Tell us what that means and why they're going through it, and what happens next for Canal Plus.
So the important thing to understand in a squeeze out is that this happens in a situation where a deal is structured as an offer rather than a scheme of arrangement. So what happens in a scheme is you go off to shareholders and you say, dear shareholders, this is what we'd like to do. Please vote. And if you get 75% approval, then the scheme is binding on all shareholders. In an offer structure, you don't have that situation. So in an offer, an acquirer is happy to get an uncertain percentage of acceptance. So for example, if an offeror comes in and says, well, I'm happy to own between, say, 60% and 100% of this company, you know, what they would do is they would make an offer that has a minimum acceptance condition. In that case, I'll say the 60%. And as long as it's accepted by that many people, then, you know, no harm, no foul. They'll acquire that many shares. The company remains listed and the rest will trade. But in a squeeze out situation, if an offer does so well that at least 90% of the shares in issue or holders of those shares accept the offer, then the offeror would be left with a very strange remaining number of shareholders, probably relatively inactive. There'll be very little liquidity. It would make no sense to be listed, etc. So then they can invoke a squeeze out where they say, look, dear shareholders, we got 90% approval. Under takeover law, we're entitled to do this. So we're invoking a squeeze out. And that means those of you who either said no to the offer or just said nothing are going to be forced to accept it anyway. So in that case, it gets you to the same end result as a scheme of arrangement, actually, it just got you there in a very different way. So that's essentially what happened here with Canal Plus. And I think as we spoke about previously, that's why MultiChoice will be delisted. The squeeze out is happening. And then remember, Canal Plus and MultiChoice as a merged entity will inward list on the JSE. So local investors will still have a chance to invest, actually not just in MultiChoice, but in the entire combined group.
Coast, thank you as always. Really interesting to hear insights and inside knowledge. We'll talk to you again next week here on Ghost Biz. Have a good one.